This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to Idea Success with Sylvia, the place you need to be for the next hour for information and inspiration to turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income and impact.
And if you want to get your ideas or help others get theirs into action, you are in the right place for the next 60 minutes. If you need to get out of your head and get things done, then stay tuned for the next hour. Hi, I'm Sylvia Henderson. They call me the Maven of Implementation, and I'm honored that you've chosen to spend your most valuable resource in your life, your time, with me today. This show is about ideas, getting, clarifying, implementing, and supporting ideas. I interview people who put ideas into action, realized their dreams, achieved their goals, and followed through with their intentions to bring you best practices you can use right away to actively create your own success. And I interview experts in a wide range of fields who are resources for you to call on to make an income and an impact with your ideas. And the person I have today, my guest, is the latter. She's one of those experts that you can call on to get your ideas out of your head. She is Shelley Rowe. Shelley, welcome to Idea Success with Sylvia.
Thank you so much, Sylvia. It is my pleasure to be here with you today.
And let me do the usual opening stuff when a lot of people listen to the program without looking at a screen. So let me read the program title and description for those folks. And I titled the program, Just Make on Your Ideas. The description is overthinking and underdoing. There's both a science and there's your gut involved in making decisions. So learn from Shelley Rowe, author, speaker, and recovering engineer, how to make more and better decisions and overcome inaction to make your ideas, your dreams, your goals, and your intentions your reality. And so, Shelley, I do not usually read bios, even though I ask for them, but the first question I ask all my guests is, so you give the listeners a little brief how you got to this point, because your story, I think, is a very fascinating story for those who were still in the workplace. So kind of how'd you get to this point?
Well, Sylvia, first of all, I love the title for the program. I mean, just make a decision already, right? We all get stuck sometimes in that overthinking place. And I like to say that I am a highly accomplished overthinker. I can overthink pretty much anything. And I come by it a bit naturally. I was trained as an engineer. I've spent the vast majority of my career, about 30 years, in the engineering profession. And, you know, there was a time, Sylvia, when I was a mid-manager and was doing okay, but I really wanted to get to the executive level, but I could tell that something was different with them, and I couldn't figure it out. Thankfully, we had a counselor there, an employee assistance counselor, and I went to see her, and she said, well, you know, why are you here? And I said, I don't know why I'm here. I can't think of anything that's wrong. And she said to me, I'm not interested in what you think. I want to know how you feel. And Sylvia, that was the turning point for me, because it began to make me understand the value that there is in how we feel. And I began to very consciously, thoughtfully think about how I felt and bring it into my decision-making in the workplace. And it changed everything. It was that realization of that we have to combine thinking and feeling, what I call cognition and intuition, that made the difference in my career. It actually made the difference in my life. And I eventually did get into the executive level. Today, I use that experience and talk with others who get stuck in that overthinking place or who make knee-jerk decisions, which is a different kind of decision-making, and help us understand how do we get to that balance point between thinking and feeling, between cognition and intuition, and I call it infotuition.
Mm. Now, before we get into the info tuition, you know, you're an experienced executive leader. I'm emphasizing this a little more for listeners, because there's a lot of folks out there in this place in their lives or in their heads, especially. Not necessarily exactly what you do, but still in the workplace. So you're an experienced executive leader. You were a transportation engineer with a 30-year career. You must have started when you were 2, because I've seen you. You hold an MBA, and I want listeners to know this, because we won't say who you work for, because I know, but we won't say it. Let's just say a very, very, very large agency in this country. And so to say that you were told to feel in addition to think, to me seems counterintuitive to, quote, big business. I mean, I came from, you know, a major corporation, and likewise, if somebody had said, how do you feel? Most people would say, who cares about feeling? Let's just get it done. So
yeah.
Now, how did you make that transition in your head?
Yeah, and that's a good question. You know, it's because I do speak with a lot of technical groups and engineering groups, and it's a very unusual thing to have an engineer talking about intuition or talking about how you feel. But it was my experience with it. You know, I began to try it out and try it on for size. And what I learned just from experience is that those feelings, first of all, we can't ignore them. It's who we are, it's how we're built, and we can't ignore them. So although I was taught as a little baby young engineer that there are no place for feelings at work, that's actually it's impossible, and it's a really bad idea. So the other thing that I did, Sylvia, is because I knew that this had been kind of a game changer for me in my career, is I thought I'd ask other leaders, because I worked with a lot of them around the country. So I've interviewed 77 leaders, and they come from a very wide-ranging background, government leaders, political leaders, entrepreneurs, leaders in universities and associations, in a wide variety of companies and financial institutions, which you would also think would be very logically inclined. And Sylvia, everyone but one said that intuition was absolutely essential to their leadership success, that they could not do without it. Like, well, that's pretty amazing. And then the other thing that happened that was a real game changer for me as well, and this is much more recent. As I was doing these interviews, it just happened that I was reading a book on neuroscience. And as I read that book, what I read mirrored what I was hearing from these executives. And I began to understand that the neuroscience explains a lot of what goes on with us and explains what we would call intuition. And for the people I work with and my audiences, because of the neuroscience, it makes intuition no longer woo-woo. And that's huge.
Uh-huh. Now, there's the engineer. Now, as you're talking, I thought, aha, there's the engineer, the research and reading a book about neuroscience. Farthest thing from my mind. So you're not quite recovered as an engineer.
No, I'm not recovered as an engineer at all. And the neuroscience is actually fascinating. When you read some of the information about it, when it's well written for normal people, then it's very accessible, and you immediately understand why it's relevant in a leadership context.
So when we're sitting here with an idea in our head, and we're busy trying to get it perfect, hear about doing the business plan and the market research and all of the things to get ready to work on our idea. While a lot of that stuff is important, how do we stop overthinking? And this may be a complex question here. How do we stop overthinking? And when do we know to go with our gut, which is what I'll call the intuition.
Yeah, and that's good. So, for example, let's kind of break that into pieces. we get that all the time. You know, people are, lots of people, turns out it's not just me who overthinks everything. We all sometimes get stuck in that decision-making process. So, Sylvia, I'm going to ask you, and I'll also ask those who are listening, just to think back on a time when you were trying to make a decision and you found yourself saying, you know, I am just making this harder than it has to be. Or, oh, we have been over this again and again and again. And can you think about, you know, how does that feel when you're in that place?
Oh, gosh. Well, it feels like I know I should be moving. I know I should be getting somewhere. I know I made these intentions, but I'm not getting there. Or that's actually a thinking answer. It feels, see, there I go. It feels frustrating. It's disappointing. It's, doggone it, I know better, but I can't get there.
Yeah, and that's what I hear all the time. In my world, we call it analysis paralysis, and it does feel frustrating, kind of like that dog chasing its tail, right?
Okay. Yeah, so it's like I'm busy, but I'm not productive.
And you're not making any progress. It's just like this stuck churning place. So let's understand a little bit about what's going on. And so I will just do just a little bitty bit of the brain science just so that we understand that this overthinking thing is real. It's something going on in our brain, so we're not odd, we're not strange. It's a completely natural thing to get stuck here. When we are overthinking it, you can think about being out of balance. So we, is again, the best decision-making is that balance place between thinking and feeling. So if we're overthinking it, then we have too much thinking going on and not enough feeling. But where does that overthinking come from? So in our brain, where we're making those decisions, it's the executive control function. It's kind of the working memory. Turns out that working memory part of the brain is actually a pretty small part of our brain. And it has certain characteristics, of which it holds very little information, like only 4 pieces of active information we can hold in our working memory at one time. That part of our brain is also very slow in processing information for the brain, and takes a lot of energy. So, for example, Sylvia, perhaps you've had a situation where, I know in a lot of the work that you do with clients, perhaps you've been in a situation where you are working with someone and you're just focused and you're thinking so hard, but you've just been in a meeting all day, but you've been thinking very hard all day. And you get home and you're exhausted, right? It's like, why am I tired? You know, I've just been sitting around in a meeting all day. It's because you've been using that working memory part of the brain, and it takes a lot of energy. So when you get into that overthinking place, you're probably working on a problem or puzzling over an idea that you want to implement that has a lot of facets to it. But you're working with a part of the brain that only can process a limited bit of information, and it takes a lot of energy. So you just get in this cycle, just going round and around and around, going over it again and again and again, more data, more information, and we think that's going to help us, and that's when we get to that stuck place. And what we have to do when we get there, first of all, is recognize it and go, oh, I am overthinking this. I'm out of balance. Mm. I need to bring more of the feeling into the picture.
Wow. And you just described exactly, you're right. A lot of what I do is do strategy sessions with individuals and with teams. And after about, and in fact, I tell them when they schedule to work with me, I say, we're going to do a strategy session. We're going to be about, I'll say 4 hours or so. And, I mean, that is close the door, I'm pumping questions, and they're talking, and we're thinking, and we're figuring out alternatives. And I tell them, I said, can it be all day? I'd like to schedule you for a day. I said, your brain's going to hurt. My brain's going to hurt. After about 3 hours, and we'll be pushing it at 4. So that's kind of what you just said may explain why our brains hurt after such a focused session.
That's exactly right, Sylvia. And in fact, what some of the neuroscience is telling us is that we actually will do better if we break our intense work like that up into chunks, like, you know, half-hour chunks and take a break.
Wow.
Because the brain, it can't process and it can't stay focused for that long, and it needs that little bit of break. And you'll probably find that, I'm sure, in the work that you do, that if you take a little break, maybe have everybody walk around, get something to eat, which also helps with the blood sugar, then they're able to come back and focus again. But it does take a lot of energy, and the more we understand that, then the better we can manage our time, our energy resources, to do the hardest work that we have to do when our brain is actually at its most active and at its peak, before we wear it out in the course of the day.
So for those, okay, this is, I've got like more questions here. So you just said, all right, to hit the brain when it's most active. And I know a lot of, you talk to different people and they say, oh, I'm not a morning person, or I am a morning person, or I do my best thinking at night, at midnight. I mean, are there really different times of day for different people when their brains are active?
Absolutely. And we all, I think it's very important, and one of the things that I try to work with people is to understand your natural energy patterns. So in my case, my high energy is in the morning. I have a person that I've worked with before, and their high energy pattern is in the evening. So that's important in both of our cases to know that. So, for example, in my case, I know my high energy pattern is in the morning. So if I have work to do, like I did this morning, as a matter of fact, I had some creative work I needed to do, putting some materials together, a new program together. It takes a lot of concentration, a lot of creativity. I do that first thing in the morning. And I know that that's when I need to do it. And things like checking my email, following up on phone calls, I can do that in the afternoon when I have little snippets of time and it doesn't take so much concentration. Someone else whose high energy period is in the evening would reverse that. Do little things in the morning, little things when their energy is low, and then as their energy picks up, that's when you want to focus. So that's the easy part. But the other part to marry up with that is that as we go through the day, situations happen to us, situations hit us that require us to focus in that moment, or they are very emotional. And all of that also drains our energy. So it would be entirely possible that if you're upset about something or stressed or overwhelmed, that brain, even if it's in your high energy time, is not going to function as well as it could if you are calm and really have a good sense of alertness. Now, that's probably more than you wanted to know, but there you go.
No. That's why I have you on, because, you know, you're breaking things down. You're breaking highly technical stuff down to, you know, plain English so that listeners can at least understand why they're, you know, why they've got good times in a day and why they've got bad times in a day, or less focused times. So how do we, I'm going to go back to the overthinking. You know, you said that our the thinking part of our brain really can only hold so much, four pieces of information at a time. We have so much more capability in our brain, though. So how do we either train our brain or what do we do to be better at? You know, where do we find more brain resources to be better at making decisions?
That's the beautiful thing about it, Sylvia, is that we have all these resources. What I like to explain to people is, you know how we say, oh, I'm going to file that away, as in filing it away in our mind? Well, that's kind of what your brain does. So whenever we have an experience, we think a certain thought, do a certain behavior, your brain, it fires up a specific set of neurons, and each set of neurons that it fires is unique to that particular thought process or that experience, and it files it away like in file folders in your head. So you have all these file folders that are created from your life's experiences. So that's great. The trick becomes making sure we give our brain a chance to use all that experience. So that's why overthinking is such a problem, because we're not taking full advantage of all of the resources that we have at our disposal if we just learn how to bring that other stuff online.
Whoa. Let me see. Where do I go from here? Because I'm thinking, all right, we've got, so there's lots of, the brain is firing like crazy. You've got lots of ideas. A lot of my clients are creatives, and so I help them get turn all of those ideas into some actual action strategy, which then makes them groan. But so we've got a lot of ideas, too many of them to focus on. How do we file them or file them into these folders and not worry about losing the good stuff we've been thinking? You know,
well, that's
some
a good
specific steps or, you know, a process
well, there's a
to co- follow?
Yeah, there's a couple things on that. You know, if you want to, and that gets in the whole area of memory and creativity. One thing that is very important is the brain. If you write things down, that helps. And I mean handwrite things down. Some of the research is showing that, like, for example, if we're listening to a webinar and we're typing things out as we listen, it's your brain is engaging in some ways. But if you actually write it down longhand, then you're having to listen, identify what's the most relevant things, because you can't write as fast as you can listen, and then
right.
translate that into something that you write on paper. That entire process means your brain is processing the whole time. The other thing that really helps is sleep. As it
Ooh.
Turns out, the brain will consolidate memories much better during sleep than during awake times, because we're so distracted. You know, we're our own worst enemies. We're so distracted. And that's the enemy of memory. Multitasking is the enemy of memory. And then the other
thing, irony
too,
of that, oops,
go
I'm
ahead.
Thinking, the irony of what you just said is get sleep, but when the ideas are flowing, I wake up at 2 in the morning, and that's the end of sleep.
But, you know, that's a great thing. So what's going on there, that's what I call an aha moment. And I've learned, Sylvia, and I'm sure you have too, I keep a pad and a paper and a pencil by my bed because it happens fairly frequently. So what's going on? So imagine that you have all those file folders in your head, and you've got this problem that you've been working on, but you just get stuck with it. If you are too focused, then your brain is focusing on whatever activity that you're doing today. If you've got a lot of visual stimulus, then your brain is, that visual function is very powerful, and so it gets focused on that. And it won't let your brain sort through all those file folders that are your experience. However, if you go do something that distracts your mind, like go for a walk or go for a run or listen to music or whatever it is that makes you happy and relaxed, or take a nap, now it's as though there's this little librarian in your head, and that little librarian is busy sorting through all those file folders and finding ones that you didn't even think about, that you didn't think were relevant to this problem, and that librarian brings into your consciousness, but that librarian needs for it to be peaceful and quiet so they can do their work. Why it's so much easier for this sort of thing to happen when you're sleeping or napping or somehow distracted. We've all had that situation, right?
That sounds like it's the mental version of when I can't figure out where I put the pen or I can't figure out where the keys went. Soon as I think of something else and don't think about it, then all of a sudden, oh, there's the pen, or oh, there's my keys. It sounds like this is the mental version of that.
It is. It is exactly like that. And what the science now shows is that there's actually kind of a process that the brain goes through. So if you want to have more of those aha moments, more of those kind of creative problem-solving moments, then what you can do is again, to be aware. It's the subtle little clues in your brain that are trying to break through the distractions and the focus that we have. So first of all, if you understand that there is relevance in those little subtle clues, then it helps to be in a good mood, the research shows. And then if you can reduce some of those visual distractions, distract your brain, give it a rest, give it a break, that will enable it to put all those pieces together, let that librarian do that work, and you're much more likely to have one of those aha moments happen.
Wow. Okay,
yeah,
I'm going to have to take a break for a minute or two. When we come back, let me get you focused on something that I've heard you speak about, and that is, you say there's four steps that are involved in ending overthinking. Actually, I do a workshop called Overthinking and Underdoing. Let's get things done. So this is going to be a great resource as an aside for some of what I've been doing in that workshop, which has not been nearly focused on the brain. So when we come back, let's talk about those four steps kind of more succinctly so that folks have here's step one, here's step two for getting out of overthinking. So think on that, and we'll be right back.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
How many times have you had an idea, yet you let so many thoughts fill your head that you're stuck in inaction and don't handle any of them? How quickly do you jump from idea to idea without focusing on any one for very long? You've got to change that pattern if you hope to get things done and turn your ideas to reality. Let Sylvia Henderson and the IdeaSuccessNetwork.com give you tools, resources, and strategies that turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income. If you want to get profitable and fulfill your purpose by getting your ideas in action, go to IdeaSuccessNetwork.com and enter your name and email address for your Idea Success Note. Sylvia's bi-monthly tips and practices for getting out of your head and into action. You owe it to yourself to do it today, right now, before another idea fills your head to overflowing.
And we're back, and I'm speaking with Shelley Rowe, and we're talking about just making a decision and act on your ideas. Shelley, before you go on and answer what I asked you before the break, what do you do specifically, and how do people reach you?
Well, thank you for asking, Sylvia. I work with organizations, associations, companies who would like to make more effective decisions. And I do that through speaking, coaching, or workshops. So I speak to a lot of associations and do a program on what we're talking about, infotuition, overthinking it, knee-jerk reactions. And then I also, so people can find me on my website at www.shelleyrowe.com, and that's spelled shelleyrowe.com. And I also have a new book that just came out called Think Less, Live More, Lessons from a Recovering Overthinker, and that's out right now on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
Great. And, you just said... Here we go, all over the place. I know I asked you about your four steps. We'll get there. You just said something that you made me think, okay, is there a difference between a knee-jerk reaction and going with your gut? Because in my head, when I hear somebody say, oh, I just had a knee-jerk reaction, that's negative in my head, versus going with your gut is positive to me. So
yes,
is that just me?
It is not just you. The knee-jerk reactions are very powerful emotional responses. So when something happens in our environment and it registers in our brain again as a fight or flight situation, so it might not be dangerous at all, but for whatever reason, maybe because of it crosses our value system, it triggers one of those old stories that we all have going on in our mind that aren't helpful. Whatever it is, it triggers a reaction that feels fearful and scary to our brain. And that's when we have that knee-jerk response. Interestingly, Sylvia, I think it's interesting, when our brain goes into that fight-or-flight mode, remember how we said that in the thinking part of our brain it takes a lot of energy?
Yeah.
Well, when the brain goes into fight-or-flight mode, it needs energy to power fight or flight. So it takes energy away from cognitive processing and redirects it to other parts of your body. So that's why if something hits your hot button or trips your trigger and you kind of lose it, it feels like you're out of control and you can't think, it's because you can't think. That cognitive part of your brain has been taken offline by the other part of your brain. And that's a whole different thing. There's a whole series of steps that we could talk about how do you slow down a knee-jerk reaction so that you can bring your brain back online and make a normal, good, thoughtful decision. Because that's a whole approach, and a lot of people, all of us, struggle with that at some time or the other.
Wow. Okay, that's another whole program. Let me bring you back. Like I said, my neurons are firing here. Let me bring you back to how do we overcome overthinking? You had four steps from what I remember you saying.
That's true, Sylvia. And so there's good news and bad news about the four steps to stop overthinking. And the good news is that they're easy. This is not rocket science. It's not even brain science. The bad news is that we want it to be harder. So you're going to hear the four steps and you're going to think, it can't be that easy. But just try it. It does work. So here's the way to think your way through overthinking it. And I don't use those words lightly. It's when you're overthinking it, you have too much thinking going on, and the way you start working your way out of it is by thinking, because that's where you are. You have to start where you are. And the first step is to recognize that you're overthinking it, and then realize that the reason you're stuck is that there's this little nagging feeling. So just put yourself back into that overthinking place, and you go, I'm just been over this again and again and again. Well, then why can't you make a decision? And if you allow yourself to sense it, you'll realize there's this little nagging feeling that's holding you back. And that's the ticket. So step one is to notice that little nagging feeling. Does that make sense?
I think, yeah.
Well, let's go on to step two. So once you notice the little nagging feeling, then the second step, some scientists call it labeling. I call it naming. So it's notice the nagging feeling and give it a name. Notice and name. And here's the part that is deceptively simple and yet so powerful. It is to give a name to the little nagging feeling, to describe it cognitively. So, for example, it might sound something like this. I've been over this again and again and again. What's bugging me about this? And then you give it a name. You know, I'm worried. I'm worried that my boss is not going to support this new idea that I want to implement. So what just happened is you noticed it by saying, what's bugging me about this? Something's just not sitting right. Something's holding me back. It's nagging at me. It's gnawing at me. All of those are phrases to help you notice the nagging feeling. And then you name it. The naming process takes something that is subconscious. It's those file folders way back in the back of your brain. And now it makes it conscious. I'm worried about that my boss won't support my idea. I'm uncomfortable that my staff are not going to agree with this new policy approach. I'm afraid that I won't be successful in this new activity and this new idea.
Okay,
all of those,
naming it is being specific with what that nagging feeling is. It isn't come up with a one word name. It's really just identifying specifically what is bugging me.
Exactly. And if you can surface what's underneath, now so you can work with it. And that's step three. I call it digging in. So, okay, I'm worried about that my boss isn't going to support my new idea. Okay, well, let's dig into that and see where that leads. So what is it that you're sensing that you know about your boss that makes you think that he or she won't support the idea? Why are you afraid that your new idea is not going to be successful? And you begin to talk yourself through that nagging feeling. That process, again, takes something that's just holding you back in the subconscious and now gets it right there on the table where you can work with it.
Okay.
So that's step three. And step four is simply to recognize that there is value in both the facts around the situation, because it might be a completely logical new policy. It might be a completely rational new idea. But that's not enough. You need to value what you think about it as well as what you feel about it, and recognize that both of those are relevant. And combine both of those, you're looking for that decision that just feels right. And that's where that gut instinct helps.
Okay. So one of the most common things I hear from people that come to me to get an idea out is, I've got an idea for a book. And it's been noodling in my head, and I've got some stuff in my computer, but I don't know. I just can't seem to get started. And so what it sounds like would be first to recognize that I'm frustrated with not getting this book started. And then it sounds like I need to name what is it about this not getting my book started. So, I'm worried about, this is hard considering I've written three, so I shouldn't have used this example maybe, but.
Well, if I can help you.
So you're
frustrated. I'm frustrated that I can't start my book. Okay, well, why am I frustrated? I'm frustrated because I feel like I ought to be able to write it by now. It's taken too long to get started. I'm frustrated because I feel like that I need it out right now. And so that begins to put on the table the reasons for your frustration. And that helps you understand why you're feeling the way that you do. Now, in that particular example, it could be that you're overthinking it and you're making it too hard and you just need to start writing, or it could be that the idea hasn't gelled yet and you have to give yourself a break. You know, that happens sometimes too. But when you talk your way through it and dig into it to understand why you feel the way you do, then it helps you sort it out. Am I just holding myself back because I'm so afraid it isn't going to be successful? I'm afraid I can't get it written. I'm not good enough. That's very different than, I'm just not quite clear on the idea yet. I need to let it gel a little bit more.
Okay.
Those are two very different things, but that's what you learn when you dig into it.
So let's bring it to you personally, because you've made some big decisions. Well, we all do. You've made, at least from what I know of you, two major, major decisions that I think a lot of listeners would really like to know. How did you move from where you were to where you are, what you did? One is personal, one is business.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I know you, when I met you, you were working for this large agency and a large organization. How in the world did you, find the guts to quit and do something that's, and be a speaker and a coach and a consultant and write a book? How'd you make that switch? Did you use those steps?
I did, Sylvia. I did do that. And, your listeners might be interested. There were two big decisions that used that process that I just talked about. When I was, and I don't mind saying, I worked for the U.S. Department of Transportation. So I worked there for a number of years, and I was actually in my dream job. It was great. I loved that job. But one day I was meditating, and meditation, for those of you who do that, you know how great it is for your brain. It is one of the best ways to let that little librarian get busy in there and find all these different file folders that are stuffed away in your brain. And so mine did that. And so she found this old file folder that housed a dream that I thought I had long forgotten, and that dream was to live in France for a year. So my little logical brain immediately said, well, that's crazy. You can't do that, right? You've got a great job. Your husband has a great job. You've got a mortgage. You have a cat. You can't move to France for a year. But because I had at this point realized the value in not only how I thought but how I felt, I allowed my feelings to come through. And in that particular instance, when I dug into those feelings, it was my dad's voice that came through. And he said, you never know until you try. And I thought, what if I could go live in France for a year, but I never even tried? And so to my husband's credit, he agreed that we would start saving money because we didn't have the money. And it took us 5 years to do that. And in 2010, I went to my boss, and they knew what I was doing, and I told him it was time, and I was very fortunate. I thought I expected to have to quit. That's a different story. But in 2010, we moved to France, and we lived there for a year. And that's why, if anyone is on my website, you'll see that I have books about travel, and it's about the year that we spent living in France and then our travels home. But that was a completely, completely illogical decision that was made by balancing both what I thought about it as well as what I felt about it. So
and
that's the
what's
first.
So huge is that, what's so huge is that now there's no regrets with that. Oh, my gosh.
It was a game changer, Sylvia, I have to tell you, because there was nothing like it. It was an amazing experience. My office gave me an unpaid leave of absence, so I actually got to come back to my job, my dream job, which was great, and I am eternally grateful to them. But here's what happened. When I got back, I began to feel uncomfortable. I had all these knots in my stomach, tightness in my chest. I was literally sick a lot. And my body was trying to communicate that I no longer was supposed to be in that job. And one of the dreams that I had written down, actually I found an old daytimer. Do you remember daytimer, Sylvia?
Oh, yes. I got one sitting here looking at me. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
A paper
one,
no less.
Alive and well.
Yep.
I found my first daytimer from 1989. And I had written down my values and some of my goals, and one of my goals was to live overseas for the year, which I don't remember writing, and another goal was to start my own business. And a third goal was to do motivational and development programs for people to help them achieve their goals. I wrote that in 1989 and forgotten about it. So when I started thinking about being in the government and doing engineering and it wasn't sitting right, again, it didn't feel right, I knew what I wanted to do was to completely change what I was doing, be a speaker, which I've always loved, and take what I had learned and see if it was of value to others. So I quit my nice, secure government executive job to start a speaking business on intuition.
Oh my.
Also not a logical choice. And so here we are. I've been in my business for 2.5 years. I love it. I've been very fortunate that what I have learned does seem to be helpful to other people, and that's what makes me happy every day.
Wow. I knew telling the story. Listeners are probably, their mouths are open, you know. Okay, two things come from that, from what you said in your stories. One, the question, does making that first big leap, that first thing that seems so illogical, but then you made the decision, you carried it out, and you found out that you're still living, you're still alive, you survived it. Not only survived it, you most likely thrived, and that puts you in a different frame of mind to make your second big decision. But so, does making it, if we're stuck in inaction, making that one big decision, that one big scary, you know, thing, and finding out we've lived through it, to make the rest of the decisions easier to make?
It does, Sylvia, but it wasn't quite like that. And so, and I think this might be helpful and useful to your listeners. The big decision, so to speak, so either whether it was moving to France or whether it was to start a speaking business and a leadership development business, the big hump was to mentally and emotionally embrace the idea. So the biggest issue was for me to say, well, maybe I could live in France, or, well, why couldn't I start a business? And once I got past that, then the steps were actually a lot of little steps. For example, in the France example, once we said, well, maybe we could do this, why don't we try? So then it was a bunch of little steps. We set up a savings account, and we put money every month into the savings account. We knew it was going to be many years for that to happen. Right. We began to research what it would take. It turned out we needed long-stay visas. We'd have to have a place to live. We had to figure out health insurance. We had to figure out what we'd do for a car. So all of those were little decisions along the way. And in answer to your question, the more we make little decisions in the direction of our dream or goal, the stronger we get. And the more your brain begins to understand that this is really serious and you really do intend this, and it begins to open up opportunity, or you see opportunities that you would not have seen otherwise, and one little step leads to the next little step, and eventually all those little steps add up and you get on the plane and you fly to France.
Oh, man, I love this. I'm loving this conversation. If we embrace the idea, and I think the idea is up in the brain, in the head, it sounds like we've got to move that head idea down to our heart. And it, I don't know what I'm saying next, down to our heart and feel it is.
Yeah, so I would say it a little bit differently, and so it's what resonates for every person. What I like to say, and I actually write about this in my book, is there's a whole chapter on goal setting, and it's about finding that goal that really lights you up, you know, the one you really care about, but probably like, oh, I could never do that, and that's the big one. If that one comes from the heart, it's what you feel is the right thing for you, and you have to allow yourself to acknowledge that. Once you acknowledge it, now it becomes a head goal. So now it's in your head, and you can go, okay, that's the goal. What do I need to do to get there? And it's very logical and rational, at least for me, the engineer, to set out a series of steps. What are all the things that have to happen in order for me to reach the goal? And it's much more meaningful. I find that I'm much more likely to achieve the goal if the goal has originally come from deep inside me, and it's one that I am emotionally and in love with. So I talk about setting goals with heart and then managing your way to get there with your head.
Okay, which is... that's an interesting twist, because, again, if I go back to the corporate me, you know, we go into goal, you know, working on goals, goal setting for the year and all of that. And it's a very head kind of thing. It's like lay out that timeline and set those smart goals. And it's just a very, most people start groaning, oh, no, not goal setting again. What you're saying makes it sound really exciting, actually.
Well, you know, I think there's a couple of different things. And now that you bring up the whole corporate experience, you know, if you were in a leadership role, and so I did this as well. When I was leading my office, we went through a visioning process and a goal-setting process. And, of course, we got input from a lot of different places, a lot of stakeholders and constituents to feed information into that goal-setting visioning process in that particular situation. And so I think one of the roles of a leader is to take in all that information, to look at the trends in the environment, and then pick that vision that has goals with it, but pick that vision that's a little out there, right? If it's right in the box, then it's not really a vision. And so it's going to be a little bit on the edge and probably not going to be 100% supported because it's on the edge. But in that case, it's the one that you feel is the direction that the company, the organization, your organizational unit needs to go in. And I had that validated by a lot of different leaders. When they're setting a vision, data only goes so far because data is backward looking. So that's where they would bring in that gut feel, which is using all of their experience to put a vision out there. Then you bring it back into the office, and that specific goal setting might be the steps to reach that vision. And it becomes, and I always get tangled up, Sylvia, about goals and objectives, so that's just me.
Oh, don't worry about it.
To get down into steps that you can get to and that you can work toward that are tangible, measurable probably, and have some time period around them.
Wow. Oh, man, this could I could converse with you about this more, a whole lot more, as the hour, and maybe I'll sneak in a few more minutes past the hour, progresses. I need to take another break. When we come back, what about when all isn't so rosy? You know, when we make that decision and we go, okay, I'm going with it, and then life happens, stuff happens.
Yeah.
And sometimes we get so beat down from that stuff happens that we say, oh, I took that risk. I made that decision. I'm working on my idea. But, you know, now it's not working or something just got thrown in the way. How do I get through that, past that, around that, and then keep moving? So noodle on that for a minute or two, and we'll be right back.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
You know those money-making ideas in your head that keep you awake at night, and your life-changing thoughts in the shower that dry up after you dry off? Well, it's time to get them out of your head and into action with Sylvia Henderson and IdeaSuccessNetwork.com. Aren't you tired of having all those ideas, dreaming your dreams, setting goal after goal, and putting out intentions, yet still facing challenges to be fully in action? It's time to turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income and impact. Enter your name and email address at IdeaSuccessNetwork.com to get tips and strategies for implementing your ideas with Sylvia's Idea Success Notes. You'll also get a bonus thank you gift for doing so. Don't waste another minute. Go to IdeaSuccessNetwork.com now and get your Idea Success Notes for moving your ideas to action.
As I listen to my own commercial, I think, man, this is so aligned with what we're talking about today and vice versa. So tell people, before you answer my question at the break, tell folks how to reach you, what you do, again, give you a chance to promote you.
Oh, thank you, Sylvia. People can find me at my website at www.shelleyrow.com. It's shelleyrow.com. And my passion is to work with organizations, individuals, associations, businesses to improve your decision-making by not overthinking it, by slowing knee-jerk reactions and getting that aha moment. And we use a little brain science along the way. And then I do have a new book out, Think Less, Live More, Lessons from a Recovering Overthinker, that's available through BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com.
All right. So we hit the roadblock. We were like, oh, yeah, I'm working on my stuff. I made my decisions. And boom, something happened. How do we get through that?
That's a good question, and that happens. It will absolutely happen. I'll just tell you one example in our story. My husband and I were saving for France, and we were 4 years into saving, and we thought we had the money that we needed to go, and we're starting to finalize our plans, looking for a place to live in France, and that's when his cancer was diagnosed. So now he was diagnosed with stage 1A lung cancer, and we were very fortunate to catch it at stage 1. He is fine now. He's 5 years cancer-free. But
yay,
that put our goal on hold. We did not give it up. So that's the first thing that I would say is to hang on to the dream, hang on to the goal. And you know, in that case, the way we thought about it, it just wasn't time yet. And sometimes those really big goals, they have their own time, if you trust that. So we saved money for another year. He had lung surgery. He went through chemotherapy treatments. He came out of it beautifully. And it was the next year that we moved to France. And so it worked out the way it needed to work out. So that's one piece of it. And those stumbling blocks always happen. And I think there are several other ways to look at a stumbling block. One of the things that I like to talk about is that when we set our goal or we put our dream out there, it's very important to have the end game clearly in our heads and in our minds and in our hearts. But we don't have to have the pathway too firmly embedded. In fact, I think it's important to hold the goal tightly but hold loosely to the pathway. What I have found is that the way I thought I was going to achieve my goals was never the way it actually happened. Many times there were lots more creative ways to get there than I could have imagined. And so it's a matter of keeping your eyes open for new opportunities that may show up that you would not previously have noticed. And it still gets you to the same end, just in a different way. And the other tip that I would share is that sometimes that stumbling block happens, and you can do what the neuroscientists call it reappraisal. And we all look at a situation that happens to us, and we want to see it the way we've always seen it. We want to see the patterns that are habitual for us. But if we can stop and say, is there another way to look at this? Is there another way to view this particular stumbling block? Is there something here I can learn from it? And you turn it a different way, examine it from a different angle, and lo and behold, many times I've found, there's something I need to learn from this, and I'm going to be better off for dealing with this obstacle now, and I still can reach where I'm going. So those are just a couple of thoughts about those stumbling blocks.
Great. As I was thinking, you know, sometimes when I finally made that big decision and I'm in action and I'm sweating, but I'm like, yeah, I did it and I'm taking the risk. And then I get to a stumbling block. Sometimes I start rationalizing. I really shouldn't have been doing this anyway. Or, I got this far. That should be good enough. You know, so yeah, somehow I have to get out of that rationalizing that stopping is okay to keep moving.
Yeah, and Sylvia, I would say, too, that when you find yourself rationalizing, for me, rationalizing has always been a signal that something is off inside me. So rationalizing is the thinking part of your head kind of on overdrive. That's the perfect time to say, wait a minute, let's just slow down here. Is there another way to view this? How else could I see this stumbling block? And there's always another way to look at it if we just give ourselves the freedom to do so.
So as we're coming to the close of our hour, or a couple minutes more, what haven't I asked you, or what last words do you want to leave with listeners about make a decision and act on your ideas and your intuition?
I would leave the listeners with the idea that the best decisions are that just right balance between thinking and feeling, and to trust that both are relevant and look for that decision that just feels right.
I hope everybody's absorbing this. And as we end the show, make sure, everybody, you get Shelley's book, Think Less, Live More, Lessons from a Recovering Overthinker, at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. And make sure you visit Shelley Rowe at ShelleyRowe.com, ShelleyRowe, there's no E at the end, .com, but ShelleyRowe.com. And you've got a Twitter handle of Shelley Rowe, yeah, at Shelley Rowe. Yeah, that makes sense. So, Shelley, thanks so much for being on the program. And, oh, my gosh, I just love what we've covered today.
It has been my pleasure, Sylvia. I love what you're doing with your program and getting people to help get their ideas into action. There's nothing more special than that.
All right, and with that,
wraps up another hour of Ideas Success with Sylvia, with information and inspiration to turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income and impact. Join me next week, same dot time, same dot channel, same dot number, for another episode of Ideas Success with Sylvia.